Hi, it's Nick Murray, co-founder and CEO of Wake Network, and you're listening to Professionally Psychedelics.
Hey there, listener, and welcome back to the Professionally Psychedelics podcast. Today, I am happy to say that I'll be joined by Nick Murray, co-founder and CEO of Wake, a psychedelic startup looking to leverage the far-ranging benefits of magic mushrooms for health and well-being. Amid the psychedelic renaissance we find ourselves in, I cannot wait to speak with Nick about what it's been like navigating business growth in the psychedelic space and speak about the research and science that makes this all possible. So, with all this in mind, there's only one thing left to say. Nick, welcome to the Professionally Psychedelics podcast.
Thank you, Jonathan. It's a pleasure to be here.
It is a pleasure to have you here, Nick. And as you know, our first question on the pod is, what led you to the plants or plant medicine?
Yeah, it was love and technology. I was starting my last kind of large startup, and it was really focused on technology and healthcare and monitoring the elderly using wearables and sensors. And I met a girl, and we quickly fell in love. And quite quickly as well, she was diagnosed with Hodgkin's lymphoma. And we were young 20-somethings, quite shocked. And that led us to try natural alternative methods. And so we went down to Costa Rica and went through a number of different practitioners, shamans, if you like, plant medicines, obviously psychedelics, as well as mushrooms. And it was quite an interesting time in my life because I was deep in technology and sensors and wearables, but then deeply trying to help my partner. And well, after 6 years, she's been fully clean, and the ride really taught me that there was something there. And so from that experience, I really thought, well, how could I marry the natural, the psychedelics with technology to try and bring this to a greater audience? And that was really where Wake was born.
And in that marrying of psychedelics and technology, how does this take place? What are you guys focused on at Wake?
Sure. Yeah. So we start with completely natural and completely organic with regards to our substrates. We try a number of different substrates, and we're lucky to have the largest cultivation facility here in Jamaica. And so we work with organic compounds to begin with, and then we test everything from the grow room. So we've built our own grow software and hardware to be able to monitor everything from the oxygen to the CO2 to the humidity, the temperature, the light, on a millisecond basis. And all of that gets fed into our big data warehouse, where we can then monitor it as it goes through the chain of custody towards an actual capsule that will go into a patient or a participant at one of our events. And that's where it gets even more exciting, at least for me, is when we combine technology that's monitoring their brainwaves. So we work with a wonderful company called Kernel. They have the Kernel Flow, and it's quite an amazing device that mixes FNIRs as well as EEG in a very space agey looking helmet. That allows us to monitor their activity before. Some of our very brave attendees and guests actually wear it during their experience, their psychedelic experience, and then we monitor their brainwaves after. Now we're also monitoring their heart rate, their blood pressure, and their blood oxygen, as well as their temperature during the experience as well. And so we marry all of that data together and then combine it with which strain that they used and what were the growing conditions. And all of that feeds back to make our research decisions and really guide our growing decisions here on the farm.
And you guys have opted for natural psychedelics, naturally derived psilocybin and psilocin, whereas lots of other folks in the industry have gone down the synthetic route. Actually, a few weeks ago, we had Ben Lightburn, the CEO of Filament Health, discussing that they've also gone down a similar path to you, really tapping into natural psychedelic compounds. For you and the team at Wake, why was this so important? Why was this such an important direction to go down for you guys?
Sure. Personally, I really believe that we just haven't really explored the mushroom kingdom fully. You know, in the 70s, everything kind of stopped. We had a bit of a winter and everything's thawing now. And so I think there's a lot to learn and a lot to explore. We see that the additional compounds beyond psilocin and psilocybin, really, they deserve a lot of attention and they deserve a lot of research. And akin to cannabis and the entourage effect. I think that there is something there with the other compounds. And so when we were starting the company to work with a lab and synthetically produce psilocybin with something like benzene, it just wasn't as exciting, to be honest. Now, we could have gone the novel molecule route, and I think that's a very exciting one. But for us, the novel, so to speak, molecules that nature provides that we haven't really explored, those are ones that truly are exciting, because things like origination that isn't in every single magic mushroom, but is in some, why is that? And there's a number of those kind of interesting anomalies that nature kind of serves up. So for us, there's plenty with the over 200 magic, let's call it, mushrooms that are out there. There's many ways that we can discover and research and see how they help people or groups specifically. And so our real mission is, how do we find the right dose and the right type of mushroom for a particular person or a particular group of people? And that keeps us busy. So we stay in the natural lane.
And you mentioned before about when you're using your diagnostic tools that you're really looking to pair folks with certain and particular strains that they are most suited to. Would you be able to give our listener a bit of a lens in on some of the different strains that are out there and perhaps how they differ from one another?
Sure. Yeah. So the earliest, or the one that most people use in the beginning, is usually Golden Teacher. That's a lower strain, and it's easier to grow, and it's just a little bit easier for a first timer. In our retreats, our clinical retreats, we usually use either B plus or Jedi. And those are stronger on the spectrum, Jedi being at the very height of the strength. And we do notice differences in the experience, whether that's the actual visuals that people see or the overall euphoria that people feel. There are variations. We're very much in the early days with regards to learning what strain would be perfect for somebody. But we just keep feeding the data that comes from our clinical retreats into our big data warehouse. And then that allows us to start learning. Maybe we should try this substrate with this strain, or maybe we should try going with a higher humidity content. There's very small changes that you make in the grow house that can make quite a difference when you actually look under the HPLC, which is what we use to look at the actual compounds after they've grown. And there's a lot to learn. So what we're hoping to do is marry a therapeutic approach with the actual product, the physical mushroom, whether it's in an extracted form or a biomass form. And that would be the actual protocol of therapeutic medicine.
And I know there'll be folks listening to this thinking about sort of when you're growing mushrooms naturally, you know, there'll be questions around consistency of the product. How do you guys go about ensuring that different mushrooms and the plants that you're growing are sort of consistent and stable batch to batch?
Yeah, that was why we really built our own grow platform. We looked out in the world and we didn't see anything that could very reliably monitor our grow rooms for our needs. Now it's nature. And so every batch, as much as you can replicate the temperature, the humidity, the light, the oxygen, the CO2 to a certain extent, you are going to have variation. And that's the beauty of the entropy of nature. When it comes to going pharma grade, which is really our main focus right now, is you must go through extraction. And so we go with a very light extraction where we're trying not to use solvents as much as possible. And it is a full spectrum extract. And so what that means is that we're able to get all of the beneficial compounds from the actual fungi biomass, not just the psilocybin and psilocin or psilocin. And that's really exciting, because at that point, now you have an extracted product that that can then be segregated into its compounds. Now, it's a very difficult process to take the full spectrum powder and then take it into, let's call it, buckets of psilocybin, psilocin, baocystin, norbaocystin, originacin. But that is how you get to a quantifiable pharma grade amount, and pharma grade being less than 0.1% variance in each capsule or tablet down the road. So that's the process. It's a lot of science. It's a lot of excitement. We have labs in the US as well as here in Jamaica and Canada that are working on this. And we've been doing exports of our product last year and this year to both US and Canada to support that.
Okay, great. So, Nick, let's take a slightly different tack here now. So I want to put myself in the shoes of someone who is joining one of your retreats. So I've flown out to Jamaica. I'm signed up. I walk through the doors of your organization or your facility. What can I expect? What's waiting for me, and how am I engaging with the medicine, your team, fellow people around me? What's my retreat experience looking like?
Sure, Jonathan, and we would love to have you down. It all begins with a video call with our chief medical director, and after you're approved, then you're clear to fly, clear to trip. You come down, our team meets you at the airport, takes you to one of our two locations here in Jamaica, where you are greeted by our staff as well as the other fellow participants. Each retreat has between 6 and 12 people attending, and you will start with just a light dinner and a meet and greet and an early to bed. Now, the next day starts around 7:30, and we do some yoga. We do a natural walk to either a river or to a small stream. And once you come back, we go through the process and you meet with our chief medical director again to discuss what dose you think would be appropriate. After that, then you prepare for the actual trip, and we take some vitals as well as some blood. And that is for our work that we're doing with the Lieber Institute, where we're working to really find what is the genomic marker to determine if somebody might be a good candidate or not a good candidate for psilocybin therapy. It's a very exciting project we're doing, and we combine metabolomics and genomics with UC Davis as well as the Lieber Institute for that. Once that's all out of the way, you're ready to go, and the experience takes about 4 to 5 hours. You're monitored throughout the experience for your heart rate, your ECG, and your breathing. And we have a number of medical professionals that are on site, as well as our actual sound practitioners that will be guiding you through your therapy. Once you're out of your experience, you're free to journal and to wander and explore the grounds. And then we all reconvene and have a light dinner and go through people's various experiences. Now, depending on the length, we do varying levels of experiences with regards to 3 days or 6 days. We will either do the integration on that evening or we'll do it the next day. And the integration is really the most important part. At least it's the beginning of the most important part, where the guest is taking their experience and bringing it into their real life. And whether it was some lessons learned or some thoughts or some ideas or some issues worked through, it really is the most important part to the whole experience, is to actually do the integration and then use that to do the work. Our team then works with them, and the group actually works with each other to help each other along. And then depending on the length of the journey that they're down here for, we'll either do another dose with them the following day, and then the integration follows up the following day. And then they're off back to where they came in from. And then we provide them with an integration work plan that's typically around 60 days afterwards. So the whole process is typically around 90 days from when they reach out to us.
And would you say there's a particular profile of person who is best suited or better suited for this type of experience, this type of retreat? You know, is this predominantly focused on people, for example, that have a particular condition or experience particular symptoms of a condition?
We've seen all walks of life. We've definitely seen an uptick in people looking for kind of peak performance from the business world or the pro athlete world. And so we've been catering to that market quite a bit recently. They're looking for a shorter, usually about a 3-day experience, and really looking for some clarity, a bit of an edge. But we've supported people from veterans, both on your side of the pond as well as our side of the pond, working through things like PTSD, depression, anxiety. We see quite frequently those, unfortunately, all being comorbid of each other. And just overall anxiety and depression with COVID and everything that we've all experienced over the last couple of years. Unfortunately, it has become even more pronounced in our society. And so we're seeing anywhere from people in their young 20s to late 70s. We've seen all ages. We do see a big improvement on around depression, people looking to connect with themselves, connect with the world around them, their friends, their family. It does seem to bring people out of a negative thought pattern, negative thought loop. And we know that from the research around the default mode network, that is very much what's happening, is that by shutting down that default mode network, you're allowing for that negative thought loop or pattern to be disabled and allow people a fresh look at things. Now that's where the integration is so important, because you're working with that shutdown or that ability for the brain to see beyond the negative thought loop. And if you can integrate that into your path forward, it's actually going to help you tenfold. So it's been really interesting to see the wonderful people who come down from day one to their last day. It's truly transformative. But a particular subset of the population, tough to say, but we're definitely seeing a lot more of the pro athlete group, as well as the business, the C-suite, that group that are very just interested in it. They've seen it, they've heard about it. We had a wonderful group come down actually a couple of months ago. The largest sports network in the world, they came down and did a documentary on a number of athletes coming through our program. And it was quite exciting. It was really interesting to see the stories that were at play and the things that pro athletes work through and unfortunately deal with after the lights go off. So we're really excited to see that come out sometime this year.
That sounds like an excellent watch, especially given that, you know, it's well documented, at least now, that sports people after their careers in particular often do experience some mental health difficulties. And sort of building on folks that do perhaps have mental health difficulties, you know, for folks that have, for example, treatment-resistant depression or anxiety, psychedelic-assisted therapy sessions are said to be, for some people, you know, equivalent to months, if not years, of traditional talk therapy. Additionally, there are, you know, many people around the world who use but don't necessarily experience the expected therapeutic benefits of traditional pharma medicines like SSRIs. How do SSRIs interact with psychedelics, with a particular lens on psilocybin and psilocin, and can they be used in tandem? So say someone is coming down to your treat, they have a prescription for Zoloft. Are they able to keep taking their daily medicine whilst being enrolled on the retreat, or is it sort of more of one or the other?
Yes, the literature is quite clear that the 5-HT2A receptor is affected by SSRIs. Now, the good thing is that if somebody is on an antidepressant, if an SSRI, and does take psilocybin, it's actually just going to make their effect much less. And so it's not an overdose risk, thank God, but it is something that is going to affect their experience negatively. So we always recommend that they speak to their doctor, and that we think that they'll have a better experience, and the literature supports that they'll have a much better experience if they go off of their SSRIs within about 2 weeks of coming down. Now, we really understand how scary that can be, and so it's very important that they work with their medical staff to titrate that down. But the literature definitely supports that people will just have a much less or no effect if they are on SSRIs and they take psilocybin.
So regulations and regulatory change aside, what would you say the main difficulties are in developing psychedelic treatments and future psychedelic medicines that can comfortably sit within the traditional medical paradigm as we know it?
I think a lot of it comes around extraction. For the medical community to be comfortable, there needs to be very little variation capsule to capsule. Psychedelics on their own are a bit scary and come with some baggage as far as just the psychedelic experience overall. And if someone hasn't had one before, it certainly can be. So any variation whatsoever to the regulators is something that I don't think will be easily accepted. Now, when you look to Oregon, they have allowed for biomass, which is wonderful. And so I think it will be the partnership of accredited labs to provide a batch-to-batch COA, similar to what we see in cannabis, that can then be confirmed and checked right on the bottle to know that this product was tested on this date and has this amount of psilocybin, psilocin, and the others in it. It's going to be a very interesting path forward when we look at the actual treatment model and how we bring this to people without really making it just for the upper class, unfortunately. Now, that I say that because if you look at the ways that it's being prescribed, it's usually with, well, it should be with two people, a minimum. So if it's somebody doing it on their own, let's say in Canada under the special access scheme, there's two people present, and that's so that one of them can go to the toilet when they need to, and the patient is not on their own. But you can imagine that a psychiatrist, a psychologist, a therapist, or a doctor, two of those for 6 hours is quite expensive. So then it comes into the insurer model, and that could be private, such as Manulife, Sun Life in Canada. And how long will it take them to support this? And this is the unfortunate chasm that we have, that without research data, the insurers, whether they're the government insurers like the NHS in your neck of the woods or OHIP in Canada, in Ontario, they will not, and rightfully so, they will not support something until they have enough data to feel comfortable with it. But getting to that point is the chicken and egg problem, is how do we get the amount of data that we need so that the regulators feel comfortable to actually start supporting this on an insured model. Unfortunately, so far, it's out of pocket. And that's not a low cost. People either coming to Jamaica or going to the Netherlands is not something easy, just on time and cost. So we've really made it our mission to really give that data to the regulators. All of our data, minus the genomics, is open source to provide to the regulators to help them make more informed decisions and really allow them to expand their regulations to accept people for medical. And we're really excited to see that Canada is leading the way. It's another first, hopefully anyway, beyond cannabis, for us to be leading the way in the world, in the G20, on a new exciting drug that's been here for older than us. So I think that's how it'll likely go. The extracted side is for the very much pharma grade. And then extracted or biomass or synthetic, the actual administration is going to need to be covered, whether that's by corporate plans or the government itself in their insurance.
And you mentioned before about the special access schemes. We've seen in the last few months only a very small handful of patients able to access medicines through the scheme, albeit there was sort of quite a lot of fanfare when it was announced not that long ago. What do you think the issues are here? What are the blockers, and how do we get to a place, I guess, with this particular lens on Canada, where more patients are able to access psychedelic medicines through the special access scheme, given the fact that insurers aren't likely to start covering these medicines anytime soon, and potentially prohibitive costs?
Very difficult to answer. The reasons for the delays, I can't obviously speak to. I would think that it's something around the actual safety. I mean, Health Canada, who announced the special access scheme coming back, is their number one priority is safety. And so they're likely thinking these people that are being included on the special access scheme applications, whether it's a family doctor or a psychologist, psychiatrist, therapist, do they have the proper training? And if not, how do they get the training? Because typically in Canada anyway, you do continuing education credits, but they're not as popular. There aren't any that seem to be really getting a lot of traction in Canada around psychedelics. So I think Health Canada is primarily worried about safety, and they're making it a very small, very targeted approach on the approvals of the special access scheme applications. We have worked with a number of special access scheme patients, and we are going to be offering a program for them to come down to Jamaica to have a discounted therapy while they're waiting. This is something that we've been really kind of excited to work on with Thomas Hartle, one of the first applicants. And he's just been a wonderful person to really help us guide our therapeutic models, some of the strain selection. And, you know, he's done quite a lot for the community as a whole. So I'd love to give a tip of my hat to Thomas just for the work he's done. But I think what we'll see is a gradual expansion of the special access scheme as more physicians are trained up and the Health Canada basically feels more comfortable. There are certainly a number of products that are available in the special access scheme. So I don't think it's a supply issue, and it's definitely not a demand one. I think just in the middle, Health Canada really wants to do it right. And unfortunately, sometimes that takes longer than expected.
And Nick, as our time starts drawing a little bit closer to the end, perhaps a final question or final flurry of questions. And for this, I'd love for you to put on your CEO hat. I'm sure that's a hat that's actually not taken off very often. But for this question, I'd love for you to have that firmly sat on your head. Now, looking at the psychedelics industry, it of course is, you know, relatively nascent in looking in terms of not these medicines and plots themselves, but the general businesses and industry and research, which has been burgeoning over the last few years. It's a fast growth nascent industry. Within that, and in particular in the last 18 months, 2 years, we've seen an exponential growth in companies that are operating within the industry that are looking at psilocybin, magic mushrooms, and that is their core focus. As a business leader, how do you go about differentiating your organization and your business enough from the other businesses out there who sort of top line are doing similar type things? How do you make your organization really stand out from the crowds, whether it be for investors, whether it be in terms of offering, whether it be in terms of potential customers and patients? What is it that is really going to define the winners and losers insofar as those who are operating in the psilocybin space?
Sure. We decided, number one, to be natural in the beginning. And because it was such a nascent industry, we also decided to go vertical, meaning we do everything from the actual growing to the testing, to the extraction, to the actual administration and back. So that actually gives us quite a nice circle as far as being able to get data and feed the data back into the loop and use that data to consistently inform our research. Research is something that is very, very important to us. I think it's important to the overall community, and the more that we can do, the more comfortable physicians and regulators will be with psychedelics in general. So we've really positioned ourselves as a leader in organic, in natural, and research-focused, using the best of breed technologies so that we can really give the best data. We'll be opening up our clinical trial on microdosing shortly, and that's something that's really been needed. There's just not a lot of actual clinical trials that have dove into microdosing specifically. Many of the research trials that we hear about from Johns Hopkins, et cetera, is on macrodose, which are very important. But the biggest use of psychedelics today is microdosing. And without clinical trials, we're going to be in a spot where everyone's doing it in the gray market, the legacy market, rather than something that's fully approved. So we're really excited about that. And I think it's just truly giving your heart to this. I think a lot of people got in, let's say about 2 years ago, for the money. And unfortunately, you know, we're seeing those companies either shut down or be acquired just because they weren't able to do the things that they said they would when they were in the fundraising track. It's a lot of work to do it, but I think if you're doing it for the right reasons and you're working with the right people, you know, things do work out in this industry. And we are in such early days that our focus has been work in Jamaica. We've got a wonderful experience with the government here and the researchers here, and really prove out the blueprint here so that we can bring it to Canada, to Oregon, to Europe quite soon. And so really battle testing things. It's very easy to get excited about this new industry, and it is wonderful. And we've really been focused on, okay, how do we make the best product and deliver it in the best way and be able to use that experience to produce a lot of research data to help kind of the world feel more comfortable with psychedelics. And that hopefully will give people more access to psychedelics.
Well, needless to say, research data is going to be a key force in underpinning the continued growth of the psychedelic space. And I cannot wait to see the future results of your clinical trial on microdosing. But for the time being, Nick, the clock has beaten us. So I'd like to say thank you so much for joining us on the Professionally Psychedelics podcast.
Thank you so much, Jonathan. It's been a pleasure.